When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming, episode 166. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading to Wiltshire in the southwest of England to talk to a farmer and magazine publisher, editor, author, Emma Smith. Emma, how are you?
Hi, Will. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Though I'm not as well as fellow parents in England at the moment, because we're recording on the day that kids go back to school in England, but in Wales we've got another week to go. So are you relieved, happy, overjoyed today?
Mixture of emotions, I suppose. My children are 17, 16 and 4, so I feel like I've kind of missed, you know, some of the homeschooling really, but yeah, it's fine. The 16-year-old definitely needs to go back, I think.
Yeah, it's been a bit easier for us. Our kids are sort of age between 5 and 10, so although it's been a challenge in a way, it's also been quite nice because they're at quite a nice period and they're still, I don't know, they're growing up fast but they're still young children, if you know what I mean. So yeah. I guess it's been much harder having teenagers, I would imagine, tough for them.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamics in our house with two teenagers and a four-year-old, as you can imagine, is quite interesting at times anyway.
Yeah.
Lots of hormones flying around. But I mean, the four-year-old is, fortunately, she's been allowed to go to preschool throughout the period anyway. We've been on reduced hours, but that's kind of been my saving grace, really, and hers, because she doesn't want to be stuck at home with mum all the time. No. And the teenagers, yeah, you know, I do feel sorry for them. They're kind of stuck at home, which is a shame, not really going out and experiencing some of the things that they should be. But hopefully we're on the downward slope now when we can perhaps start getting back to a bit of normality.
Yeah. And I think we all realise how fortunate we are to have been on farms, don't we, during this last year. But at the same time, it will be nice where we can go places again, won't it?
Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to April the 12th, where we might be able to sit in the beer garden and sample a beer, or just be able to go out for a walk. I know we have been able to do that, but, you know, yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm desperate for a pint of draft Guinness now at my local pub. I've missed draft Guinness more than I've missed friends and family.
Oh dear.
Anyway, so what have you got going on the farm?
So for us at the moment on our farm, we're just coming up to calving, really. We've had two calves so far, but the main bulk of Herefords, generally, you know, we're building up to them now, really. So that's quite exciting. And then, you know, COVID permitting us allow to attend, we've got some of our spring sales coming up. So we're just in the process of halter breaking bulls and, you know, starting to think about stock selection and, you know, attempting to put halters on and trying to persuade them to be polite and friendly.
You've got three different breeds of cattle there, have you?
Yes, we've got three. So we've got Herefords, the Red Ruby Devons and the Shorthorns. My partner's been in Hereford since he was born, really. His father was into Hereford, so it just seemed like a natural choice, really. I met my partner a bit later on in life, so he'd already established his Hereford herd, and I'm from Devon, so I'd established my Red Ruby Devon herd. So when we got together, we amalgamated the two herds, and we've just kind of fell into the Shorthorns, really. But, you know, we're not going into Angus or Galloway's, that's it. Three native breeds on one farm is enough for me.
Yeah. So how do the three different breeds differ, especially for non-farmers who might be listening? And what are the pros and cons of each breed?
Okay, so I'll start with the Herefords. The Herefords are very, very docile. They are, you know, you don't have any issues with calving. They're generally easy to hold to break. And they're almost like pets. I mean, you know, don't go up to a Hereford cow in a field and stroke it. But, you know, their personalities are just very friendly. They're very quiet, very easy to work with. They make good mums, very milky. And obviously they taste quite well. You know, they make a good steak. The Red Ruby Devons, again, they're very similar to the Herefords. And when we did join the two herds together, we were surprised, actually, how well they got on. Okay. They're incredibly good mums. They are friendly, but a step down from the Hereford, I would say. Okay. We've got one Devon in particular who's not particularly friendly, but, you know, we're used to her now. She's the grumpy cow on the farm. But the two together actually make quite a good cross. So we have put the Hereford bull on the Devon cow.
I have you. And, okay. That's interesting. Yeah,
they've made a really good cross. Mm. And the Devons, they do eat well. They are later maturing, but, that, you know, that's fine. And the Shorthorns, similar again, really. They're slightly harder fleshing. They would take a bit more concentrate food to perhaps get them up to what we would want in a show condition. Mm-hmm. You know, the Herefords and the Devons are easier fleshing, so they, you know, convert their grass to meat quicker than a Shorthorn would.
Yeah.
But, you know, as natives go, they just seem to gel and they work together, and we manage them as one herd. So, you know, it works fine.
Yeah. Okay. When you mentioned that the Hereford's a pedigree herd, again for non-farmers listening, what does that actually mean? It's a phrase that we sort of throw around quite a lot in farming, I guess. What's the difference between a pedigree animal and as opposed to a commercial herd?
Well, a pedigree animal is just one pure breed. It's got no other cross of breeding in it. They're meant to be purebred, so you can only breed from a pedigree mm-hmm. Hereford. And potentially they should earn you more money. You know, you're picking genetics and selective breeding to create the perfect animal, I suppose, whereas commercial cattle would be, and they would be managed slightly different. You know, ours are pampered pedigrees. They really are nurtured, but it's all about the genetic breeding.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned that you will be preparing to get halters on them soon. And that's because a big part of selling pedigree cattle is to take them to shows and things. How has that affected things for you over the last 12 months?
Oh, it's been very sad. We've had no shows. Our calendar from May until October really is jam-packed. Mm. You know, we start from the Southwest shows and work our way up through the country, really. So, yeah, we have missed that. We've backed right off with the halter breaking, really. And, you know, the cows had a summer off, really, last year. But, you know, it's fine. We're thinking about things for this summer. There is talk of the Yorkshire going ahead.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to wait and see, obviously. But if not, we'll just look to next year, really, and start the selection process in January and get the halters on them then.
Yeah. Has it affected the way you sell them or not at all? Has that made any difference?
It did a little bit last year, you know, because really, showing and attending agricultural shows is a shop window, not only for farmers, but it's, you know, commercial farmers go to shows to potentially look for a bull mm-hmm. and to meet up with fellow farmers. It's a massive social thing. Yeah. So I would say last year, yes, it did have an effect. However, the trade this spring for bulls seems to be really flying. Mm. So I'm hoping maybe, you know, things will pick up and yeah, we can start to get back to normal a little bit.
Yeah, and it has had a big effect on the community as well, hasn't it? I mean, I guess when we're at our busiest, the only time I really get off the farm is to go to livestock markets on a Wednesday, and it's been quite difficult because at the moment we're just dropping cattle off and going home. You know, you know, it's a big part of the community, isn't it? The shows and events, and it's been difficult, I think, for people, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive part of it, I think. Even if you're not into showing as a stock person, like you say, you know, deals are done at some of these shows, and it's all about the banter and meeting up with people. Yeah. And, you know, like you say, the Royal Welsh Show, I mean, we all know how big that show is. Mm-hmm. And that is the go-to place for meeting friends and having a good time and discussing breeding and taking the mickey out of one another. And, you know, and like you say, with markets and things, I mean, we don't sell a huge amount through a market, but, you know, even when we do, we drop the animal off, we go for a bacon roll, you go into the cafe, you have a cup of tea, you see the people that you know. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, it would be nice to start kind of getting back to normal and seeing people again.
Definitely. And you also offer a professional foot trimming service there for cattle. How long have you been doing that?
So my partner started that side of the business about 10 years ago. And yeah, it's just grown and grown, really. We specialise more in pedigree bulls and pedigree cattle, but we do dairy herds and things. But it definitely keeps him busy. So we would be coming into our busy time of year now, really, where people are thinking about getting their cows out and having their routine check. But we also do a lot of shows and sale foot trims. So, you know, we did see that drop off a little bit last year. But with some of the sales coming back on for this spring, he is out busy doing more bull's feet.
Yeah. And it's a highly skilled job, isn't it? For people who haven't seen it, when you see it done, you see these massive bulls turned over on their side and the feet being trimmed with a angle grinder, effectively. It's a real art, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I've never tried to do it, I'll be honest. Before we had our daughter, our youngest daughter, I used to go quite a bit and help him push the cattle in up the race, mm-hmm. and, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, and I should imagine it looks pretty horrific. But yeah. I would just like to stress that, I mean, we do have a rollover crate, and mm-hmm. we feel for us, for animal welfare and operator safety, it is by far the best method of foot trimming a cow. You know, all 4 feet are secured in place, the bull or the cow is secured in place, mm-hmm. and then, you know, we can just go and zip around the feet and, you know, get the job done and pop them back down and off they go.
And you also, even more on the cattle, you just briefly alluded to it, but you also offer a bespoke show and sale preparation service. Again, that will have been badly affected this year, won't it? You know, it's been so difficult, hasn't it, COVID, and so many things you don't hear about.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. In some ways, it's been nice because we tended to the garden last year. We did a lot of al fresco dining, you know, tried to recreate the show scene at home and eating our burgers outside. But it really has. It did affect our business slightly last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're lucky that we've managed to ride the storm, and hopefully, fingers crossed, if we can get to perhaps, you know, Beef Expo's on in October. So we're already thinking about some of the calves that we might exhibit there. So, you know, it's just remaining positive. The cattle aren't going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. So we're just going to wait and, you know, bide our time.
Yeah. Okay. So as we've heard, your work in life is very much cattle dominated. And listening to all that, you'd assume that you are a born and bred farmer. But not at all, right? You didn't come from a farming background.
No, my parents are both from London, and very early on, me and my brothers were moved down to Devon. And at the age of 13, I just started working on a farm park. Always had an interest in animals. I secretly wanted to be a vet, but very soon quickly realised I'm not clever enough to be a vet. So I had to think of other things to do, really.
Okay.
I did used to be embarrassed about the fact that I wasn't from a farming background, and probably for 20 years I never let on,
right?
Because, you know, there used to be a bit of a stigma. Mm-hmm. You know, me and my partner are first generation farmers, you know, but now, you know, with all this inclusivity going on, and, you know, I'd like to encourage people to not be ashamed of the fact. So And I think I've done quite a good job. I've tricked everybody into thinking I was from farming stock.
which farm park in Devon was it? Was it the Big Sheep?
It was, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. I like the Big Sheep. We've spent a bit of time in North Devon. We've taken the kids there a few times when they were very young. They enjoyed it, even for born and bred farm kids like ours.
I was there for 8 years in the end. I started when I was 13 and I left when I was 21. And I owe a lot to that job, really, because obviously I veered off on the cattle route, but the sheep were my first, you know, livestock experience, really. And yeah, loved it. Brilliant.
I guess as well, working somewhere like that would give you a good feel for people and working with the public and sort of, I hate to use this word, but educating or explaining what we're doing on farms to people who want to know more, I suppose.
Yeah. And by the time I was 16, I was running some of the lambing shows or the bottle feeding shows. And I suppose that's kind of where, for me, you know, my whole journey stemmed from, really. I just love it, you know, I really do love it. And if I can just help, it sounds corny, but teach or just get people to understand, you know, different things about the farming world, then and people are interested. And you know, the Big Sheep was really good at, you know, we had great opportunities to educate across all different aspects of sheep farming, you know. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you go from there to working actually in farming itself as a practical farmer?
So when I was 16, I went to an agricultural college in Devon, and I actually did an animal care course first, but one of my modules was a livestock based course, which was obviously my favourite. Mm-hmm. And I met some lecturers there, and one of them had a farm and he had pedigree Angus cattle. So I started working for him on a Saturday, just getting into, you know, the pedigree world that way. And once I finished that course, I decided then to do a national certificate in agriculture. And that's kind of where it really flew, really. You know, as part of the course, we had to do duties. So I had to do milking before college. You know, we had to do pig duties, sheep duties. And so kind of I wanted to learn more about it, really. So I stayed on to college for 2 more years. Everyone joked that I would never leave college, but I just wanted to learn. So I did a countryside management course, and then I just felt the three tied in together. I had I learned how to put in a staple on a fence post, and I'd learned a bit of cow welfare, and I'd learned a bit of animal husbandry. So when I left college, I went to Ireland and potted around there for 6 months, having a go a bit of milking and, you know, doing all the things that Ireland has to offer.
Yeah.
And then I came back and got a herdsperson's job. And I suppose it just grew from there, really. So I've relief milked, been a lambing assistant, got more involved with the pedigree cattle. I just wanted to learn all aspects of farming to really establish what I wanted to do.
I suppose you've illustrated quite well that even if you are from a non-farming background, if you're keen and you want to get into farming, that there are roles there to find, aren't there? You know, you've just talked about a range of different things you did and getting those opportunities, I suppose.
Yeah, it is such a diverse industry. I mean, there is so many more jobs connected and involved within farming than probably we're all aware of. Mm-hmm. And from a non-farming background and being female to a certain extent, you know, I felt that I had a lot to prove. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get my hands mucky, and I wanted to know what I liked and what I didn't like. There was jobs that I didn't like. But until you try something, you don't know, do you? So, no. And I always think nothing ventured, nothing gained. Give it a go. I have had a lot of jobs, I'll be honest with you. It's taken me a little while to figure out my little path, but I'm okay with that now. It's fine.
Yeah, definitely. But when you were 27, you were back to uni again.
Yeah, I just felt. Yeah, I know it's a bit of a running joke in my family that all I ever want to do is be at college or be at university. But I just felt I wanted to apply all the practical stuff that I'd learned
yeah.
and put it into theory, really, and learn a bit more about our industries and expand my knowledge. So I did a foundation degree in agriculture, which just topped up my knowledge, really, but it made it more managerial. You know, I learned a bit more about business structure and stuff. And then I topped up with an honours degree in rural business management. And that was all about strategic planning. But that was good because one of our modules was to apply for a tenancy farm.
Okay.
You know, and that's not something to be taken lightly, is it? These application forms are quite heavy. And so that was a good practice. So, yes, I did 3 years at university at the age of 27, was completely the oldest person on my course, but that was fine.
What was it like going back at 27? Because I guess it's not the worst age to go back, though, is it? Because you're still young enough it's not like going back when you're 45, 50, where you're very much going to be kind of, I guess, well, there's nothing wrong with that, but you are going to be quite different to the rest of your tutor groups and things. But if you're that age, you're only a little bit older, so you can still enjoy the experience, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I had my son at that stage, so he was quite young. In reality, I wasn't that much older than all my peers. No. However, they did make me feel quite a lot older, which was very unfair of them. But, you know, at lunchtimes, we would go down to the pub and have a pint and, you know, discuss kind of our lectures and how we were going to assess, you know, how we were going to complete our modules. So it was fine. The only difference was at the end of the, you know, college day, I would go home, feed my cattle, pick my son up from school, you know, do all that kind of stuff, whereas they were probably going back to the pub.
Yeah.
Less responsibilities, but there you are.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about the Hereford Cattle Society, being the youth coordinator for that. How did you get involved?
So, I mean, obviously, like I said, I've been involved with the Herefords quite a while now, and my partner and I just saw that there was a gap within our breed specifically. There wasn't really anything for the youth. And I, as a youth myself, many years ago, attended the Aberdeen Angus one. You know, they've got their YDP, their youth program. And I just felt that maybe I could not replicate, but try and offer something for our young Hereford breeders. And so I boldly approached our council one day and asked if they would allow me to organise an event or just to trial something to see if there was any interest within our breed. And so I organised a weekend workshop where we had the children come onto a farm and we taught them about halter breaking, washing, grooming. I mean, it was purely focused on pedigree preparation, you know, sale and show preparation, but we did a bit of stock judging. Some members within the breed came and talked to them about nutrition and things. We had a dinner in the evening. I offered prizes. We had 30 children attend. Children from Northern Ireland came over, which was great. So it just went from there, really. And I think because I could prove that there was a need for it, I was allowed to continue. So I did. And here we are. We have 90 paying members. I facilitate kind of seminars and workshops for them, really. Organised trips. We went to Ireland a couple of years ago and exhibited cattle at Tullamore Show. I just, you know, help them with university applications if they need it. So anything that they want to do. I did an online quiz a couple of weeks ago, which was interesting. It's just, I don't know, encouraging them to meet new people, learn new skills and learn about our breed.
That's absolutely fantastic. I mean, the kids, you know, I suppose, again, I don't want to keep mentioning COVID, that it has, I guess, highlighted the importance of communities and networks, hasn't it? So something like that for small children is really invaluable, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think they've missed it, to be honest with you. I mean, we always have a yearly workshop and I facilitate things on a national level because I really want them to engage with peers and young members from all over the country, really. I don't want to just solely focus on regional areas. So obviously I haven't been able to do any of that this year, which is why you know, I've tried to stay active on Facebook. We did the quiz the other day. You know, I'm putting silly videos up of myself, which is highly embarrassing. I mean, I was fortunate that the long-standing members have formed their friendships, really, so they can all stay in touch. It's just I'm niggling in their ear saying, I'm still here. Is there anything you want? We'll be back soon. Don't forget, I'm still here. So, you know, I've got big things planned for next year, hopefully.
Okay. And you went to New Zealand a couple of years ago.
Well, we went last year. So it was the World Hereford Conference, which happens every 4 years. And New Zealand were hosting, and they decided to host a young breeders competition. And so we invited as many countries that wished to enter to go. So I managed to persuade my council to allow me to enter a team. And we did. So we took four young members, and they participated in a range of competitions from butchery, stock judging, New Zealand style fencing, which they were rubbish at. their worst module. They had to do some young handlers, and one of my team members was second in the whole world. So that was quite a good moment. Amazing. But it was tainted with coronavirus. It was just, you know, I couldn't get home in the end for a couple of days because my flights were cancelled and I was stuck out there. And yeah, it was an amazing conference. It was amazing.
Yeah. And those youngsters will remember that for the rest of their life, won't they? That experience. I mean, the fact that you've facilitated that, that's something really cool, I think, isn't it?
I'm 38 years old and I wept when I was out there because, you know, our program's been running 4 years. We've never entered anything like that before. They all take the mickey out of me anyway because they say I'm soppy. But I just felt so proud that we'd achieved it. And, you know, we were there representing our country, and there was UK delegates out there supporting us as well. And it was just about showcasing British farming, the UK, and what we're made of, really. And we really stuck true to our roots. Like, how we would prepare cattle in this country is completely different to Canada or Australia. And it was very noted. And they all thought we were bonkers. But the team stuck true to their, you know, they'd made the decisions. They were sticking to the British style of things. And it was great. And like you say, you know, they're all still in touch now. You know, they're quite all active on Facebook. I mean, this time last year we were out there. So there's a lot of buzz around, you know, us being there last year. But moving forward, 2024, it's in America, so we'll aim to go again.
Yeah, okay. So you've obviously always had a passion, which is very obvious throughout the interview so far, for sharing the knowledge about farming, and especially with sort of young people and children. So that led you to do a master's degree in children's publishing. When was that, fairly recently, or when did you do that? When did you fit that into your busy life?
Well, yes, there's a theme, isn't there? I went back to university again. My partner thought I was crazy, but so I completed the degree last September. So actually, I found that quite tough because I started the previous September.
Yeah.
So 6 months of the course, and you know, publishing is completely new to me.
Yeah.
Completely new industry. And again, yes, I was the oldest on the course, and obviously I'm older than I was with my first degree, so the students were a lot younger this time. But they didn't make me feel quite so old. But I just wanted to connect the two industries, and I didn't know how to do that unless I learned some new skills. So, yeah, master's degree in children's publishing, why not?
So did you, when you decided to do that, had you got anything at the back of your mind? Have you got any ideas or anything that you particularly wanted to do with that at that stage?
I suppose, yes, I did have. I learned to go there to learn the skills to write a children's book. Was my, you know, which I still would like to do someday. But as we worked our way through the course and we were set assignments and projects, it was very much about creating a project and seeing it through. So yes, that was where some of my ideas for the magazine formed. And it, yeah, just went from there, really.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, on that, tell us about the magazine that's just launched.
So, yes, off the back of my publishing degree, we had to do a dissertation. We could either do a 15,000 word essay, which I did not want to do, or create a sellable project or product, okay. I suppose. So, yeah, go, like you said, working with children, wanting to connect, writing a book. So, and the idea of a farming magazine for children had been in my head probably for a couple of years, but I just kind of kept pushing it to one side. So I created a prototype for my dissertation, and it just went from there, really. So it did enable me to create some market research and see whether actually there is a gap in the market for one, whether it would actually be a valid, you know, product, whether people would be interested in buying it. The research proved yes. So I waited until I finished my degree, and then I just started slowly sourcing people, articles, you know, and trying to bring it all together, really. And yeah, the first issue went out last week.
Very exciting. So where did the name come from? Did you think of the name?
No, I didn't. In a short answer.
It's really good though, isn't it? It's spot on.
I think so. So we had an original name. My dissertation magazine was called The Future Farmer, okay. But it was too close to other farming young breeder initiatives out there, and I think the copyright would have been too,
yeah,
it was just too close, so we had to change it. Yes, I did come up with the tagline though, which is cultivating our future farmers.
I noticed that. I really like that.
Yeah. Well, because we've got the tire wheels on it and things, I want it to, you know, so I still got the future farmer wording in there.
Yeah.
But no, I cannot take credit for the young stock, I'm afraid.
The young stock. Yeah, well, and it looks great. That's the first thing. You kindly sent me a copy before this interview, and it looks brilliant, really, from the moment you open the envelope, the front page, and all the colours and everything. And you've got a real, really wide variety and range of content in there as well. You know, loads of competitions and things for kids to do. I guess you set out to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I want the children to enjoy reading. I want to encourage reluctant readers, because it's quite known, I suppose, that farming children just want to be outside all the time, but actually they do have to learn to read, and they do have to learn to do their studies. So it was all about encouraging reading, educating farmers' children, but I'd like to go wider than that. You know, that's the bigger picture. But we also created a colour palette that was earthy. I wanted to kind of be colours associated with the land and farming. And I want the children, so we've set quizzes and little tasks in there and things. I want them to enjoy researching about their industry that they're in. I don't want to just hand it to them all on a plate.
Yeah.
So, you know, the quizzes is all about trying, you know, making them remember the information that we've supplied, really. The response has been overwhelming. I honestly can't believe it. Yeah, it's great.
I suppose as well, one of the challenges that we all have as parents of young children these days is the ever-present screen, tablets or phones or TVs, whatever it may be. So, you know, again, this is just sort of getting them away from that, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, and I feel really passionate about them having a print copy. People have approached me about doing it digitally, and at the moment I just don't want to do that. I want them to be excited about getting their own post. I want them to be excited about, you know, and we all enjoy the Farmers Weekly and the Farmers Guardian coming through the post, and I know a lot of children do sit down with their parents and read that, so why not have their own version of it, you know? So I do think maybe in time we'll perhaps try and introduce online activities and things for them to do, but I really, really feel passionate about them having a print copy.
In my experience with some of the things I've done, people are very keen to help when it comes to farming and education. If you sort of say, look, we're doing this and it's aimed at children, people are very quick to say, yes, what do you want me to do? Have you found that as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I only wrote a small snippet of March's issue because I don't want people getting bored of my writing style. So, and I'm not a very good writer, really. So I, you know, opened it up to various groups that I'm involved with on Facebook. And there's lots of us out there, like you say, that want to help, want to write, want to teach, want to educate. I definitely could not have pulled this off on my own. So if there's anyone else out there that would like to contribute or write an article, because there's so many things that I want to discover and explore, and you know, I'm not always going to get it right. I appreciate that. And there, within farming, there are subjects sometimes that, you know, aren't particularly nice, but if we can just provide the information for the children to digest in their own way and learn from in their own way, then that's kind of my aim, really.
Yeah, and I know, because not only did I give it the kids to read, I obviously read it as well, and you've got a real nice international flavour as well in there too. You know, people writing from farms and ranches in other countries too.
Yeah, so I really want to focus the magazine on British farmers and British produce, and you know, there's a recipe in there, and we're going to focus on a different fruit or vegetable each month. But also, I want children to be aware of other children in other countries. Yeah. So we've got a farmer around the world feature, because their way of farming would be completely different to our way of farming. And I find all that kind of stuff interesting. So why wouldn't the children? So let's just broaden their horizons and, yeah, for educate sure. them.
For sure. So what kind of response have you had? I know you said you've been quite overwhelmed with it, but what kind of feedback have you had so far?
Honestly, I cannot believe it. Just parents messaging me with pictures of their children reading the magazine and saying that, you know, that they were reluctant to read and they didn't enjoy the reading. But actually with this magazine, they've just gone off and done it on their own. I've had pictures of people making carrot cakes because that was the recipe for the month. And lots of yummy carrot cake pictures are coming in. One lady messaged me and said, actually, you know, the age range is 7 to 11, but don't underdo yourself because younger children are looking at it. I was slightly concerned that we'd made it too wordy, and there wasn't enough images in there to support the text, but I'm just trying to create a range. So one page is the young stock yearlings, which is aimed for the under sevens. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, the children aren't going to like everything in the magazine every month, but if we can have a bit of everything in there to, you know, encourage them and make them enjoy at least parts of the magazine, then hopefully I know, it's just been amazing.
Definitely. Well, my there was a pack of carrot seeds came with the magazine, obviously, and my 9-year-old is very, very excited about growing them. She was planning that at the weekend. So,
oh, good.
So thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Where do you want to take it? What are your long term plans? Or at this stage, are you just kind of feeling your way and seeing what happens?
This is a massive learning curve for me, because doing 1 year's master's degree in publishing does not teach you how to be an editor. So, you know, it's a massive learning curve. I'm just going to go with it now. I feel like we still need to settle in. There'll probably be a few things that we'll tweak and change within the magazine. But I suppose the bigger picture, I think, start attending shows with a stand. I'd like to get out and meet some of the readers, you know, and see what they've been up to. If we can get it into schools or into city farms or into places that perhaps don't have, you know, the opportunity to learn about some of the things that us as farmers possibly take for granted. You know, I'm not doing it to make money or anything. Yes, it's a business and I have to cover my costs, but it's a journey and I'm really enjoying it. And I feel with the youth group and, you know, the previous jobs that I've had over the years, it's all just slowly kind of starting to come together, really. So, definitely. Yeah, we'll see.
Definitely. And it feels like something that wider industry should get behind and support as well. So yeah, hopefully there'll be some opportunities there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where can people go to find out if they want to get hold of a copy?
So we have a website, which is www.theyoungstock.com, and all the ordering information and everything is on there. It's been tricky because obviously I'm launching a project or product in a pandemic. So at the moment, that is the only way that you can buy it. Mm-hmm. But I am on Instagram and I am on Facebook under the Young Stock. So if they just want to go and be nosy and have a look at some of my silly videos and some of the, you know, teasers that I'll be dropping in for the upcoming issues, then yeah, that's where you should go.
Fantastic. Okay. I can't not ask you about the Oxford Farming Conference. I would get in trouble with my fellow directors if I didn't. You were an emerging leader last year, or was it last year? I've lost track of time. 2020, yeah. As I was in 2018. What was that experience like? And how did you initially come to hear about it and get involved?
Well, my experience was incredible. I've never experienced anything like it. And I've done quite a few things in my time. I'll be honest with you, it wasn't on my radar in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine, she suggested that I just apply for it and become an emerging leader. And I thought, don't be so silly. I'm not an emerging leader. What the hell does that mean? Anyway, started, you know, researching into about the conference and looking at the program on offer and thought, well, I don't know, we'll give it a go. So I did give it a go, and there was over 100 applicants for that year, and 29 of us were selected. And again, yeah, I couldn't believe that I'd been selected, really. I don't see myself as a leader. But wow, what an experience. It was just, yeah, so we had a training day in the November prior to the actual conference. And yeah, we met Minette Batters, met all my peers, went to the American Embassy, just discussed farming on a completely different level, really. So that in itself, and being from the country, London was awesome. You know, it's such a buzz, isn't it, to go up there for a day. Yeah. And then the conference itself, I found very enlightening, interesting. Oxford's a beautiful city anyway. You know, enjoyed everything that the program had to offer, really, and I've met some, you know, some lifelong friends and contacts, which is great.
That's fab. That's music to my ears. That's what I want to hear.
What I was meant to say.
I'll send you that 20 quid later. No, it's really interesting you say that, actually, because my experience was almost exactly the same, to be honest. I come in from sort of North Wales. The Oxford Farming Conference wasn't, yeah, I knew about it, but it wasn't massively on my radar. But you know, somebody suggested to me to apply as well, and I had that same reaction as you. I was, well, God, you know, that's not for me, that's not how I see myself. But you know, I did gave it a go and somehow blagged my way in, and you know, it was just brilliant from the moment I arrived, really. And I found it so and this is such an overused word and in a cliche anyway, but I just found it so inspiring. I just came away absolutely buzzing for things I could take away from it back to my own farm and business. And I've obviously got more involved since. But tell me about the ghost.
Because
it wasn't all. I couldn't believe this.
You know when you attend things and there's always that one person that moans or that's whingy or that you look at and you think, oh my gosh. Well, I was that person because, well, we stayed in our accommodation, which was beautiful. And you have your breakfast in that big hall. My accommodation was beautiful. However, I was the only person in a 300-year-old block of resident student rooms, and there was a ghost there without a shadow of a doubt. I did not sleep, and it had nothing to do with the amount of Prosecco that I drunk. There was just an aura. Do you know what I mean? There was an aura about it, and honestly, I just couldn't stay there. And everyone on my program thought I was nuts. I couldn't stay there. I had to change rooms, and I was so embarrassed because I'm not one of those people that makes a fuss about anything. I would just go along with it. But yeah, the ghost was there. We didn't become friends. I just had to leave him behind and move rooms. So there you are.
What was it? Were things banging and clanging in the night? Or
yes, they were. And when you're in a whole block, all of my peers were in a relatively modern block.
Yeah.
Which looked lovely, but they were all together. I, however, was not. And my surname is Smith, so I can only presume that they'd done it alphabetically order.
Yeah.
And just kind of bunged me in somebody's room over there. And I mean, no offence to the student's room, because it was very nice. It was massive, far bigger than my student accommodation. But it was haunted, and I did not like it.
Well, I don't blame you, because I would have been straight out the door. I would have certainly asked for another room. So
yeah, not good.
Yeah, what a brilliant experience of Oxford.
Yeah, it's not really one that I wanted to remember, though. Thanks very much.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll gloss over the ghost and we'll just say that you had a brilliant experience.
Yes, it was very, very good.
Yeah, okay. You're busy. You've got a hell of a lot going on, as we talked about your family, everything going on at home. You've just launched a magazine, everything you do. How do you clear your head from all that? Do you need to, I don't know, do you manage to find any spare time or do anything different?
These last 5 weeks, no, I haven't, I'll be honest with you. In between sorting children, feeding cows, supporting my partner with our other business. However, prior to that, I joined a running club, you know, called the Lone Wolves Running Club. And so I do like running. I'm terrible at it, but I got up to around the 9K mark, which compared to all the other people in that group is terrible. However, yeah, so running would be my thing. And in the summer, I do like open water swimming. I just started that last year. And yeah. I find that really, that is just very calm and peaceful. Yeah, and yeah. You know, there's the odd stork, or no, not stork, heron.
Stork,
yeah. Didn't have a baby in its mouth. yeah, so either running or open water swimming would be it for me.
That's fair. I've got a few friends who've sort of got into open water swimming, and it just, I don't know, I don't like the cold very much. It just fills me with horror every time I see pictures of them doing it, but they love it. It's amazing how it's taken off, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. I'll be honest with you, the first time I went, I kind of just was quite blasé about it and thought it would be fine. And I got halfway out into the lake and suddenly had a massive panic attack and thought, I have no life jacket, no way of getting back, and there's probably fish and ducks. And but yeah, no, it's, I definitely, definitely promote it.
Brilliant. Okay. Let's finish this off in the traditional way with the five hard-hitting questions, if you're ready.
Okay.
What's your all-time favourite song?
Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers.
Oh, what a classy choice.
That's thank awesome. You.
That's very classy. Brilliant. Love that. Okay. Because we're all sick of being stuck at home, as we've talked about, and we're all dreaming of going on a holiday, if you could go anywhere tomorrow for 2 weeks, all expenses paid, where are you going?
This was a difficult one, but I think I would go, because of the time duration, Australia.
Okay. Be nice to get some sun as well, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I could just lie on the beach. It'd be amazing. Yeah.
Okay. If you could download a skill or talent directly to your brain, so for example, mine would be playing the piano, but I can't face the years of learning. What would it be?
Well, I already play a musical instrument, so I've gone with learning a new language, please. Probably Italian.
Oh, cool. Yeah, okay, great choice. Okay. Yeah, quite a lot of people, I guess, have been learning languages over lockdown.
But yeah.
Awesome. Okay. We've all watched loads of TV over the last year. What's the best thing you've watched?
I'll be honest with you, I don't watch telly, which is terrible.
Don't you?
No, honestly.
Not at all.
Well, I badgered my partner to buy us a new smart telly for Christmas, and I haven't really watched it. I bought Disney Plus, which I really like. I like all the Disney stuff. However, I have just started watching It's a Sin.
Okay. Is that good? I haven't seen that yet.
Well, I've only watched the first one, but yeah, I've heard lots of stuff about it on the radio, and I thought I'm going to give this a go. I'm not a massive episode series watcher, but yes, the first one was really good. I've been looking forward to watching the rest.
Yeah, sure. We've heard that's good, so that's on our to-watch list. Okay. Lastly then, traditional way to finish, what's your favourite agriculture-related social media account to follow and why?
Well, apart from you, obviously, and what you do, I've got to say that.
Thank you. I'll up that 20 quid to 25.
I've put either Richard Brown or Heddy's Farm. He was obviously one of my fellow emerging leaders, but he's so good with a selfie stick, isn't he? I mean, how he runs and farms. And so, yeah, I enjoy watching the two Richards. Yeah.
Yeah, great choices. Yeah, I both of those are brilliant Twitter accounts, aren't they? Yeah, I love following both of them. Cool. Emma, it's been fantastic to speak to you. Just thanks so much for everything you do. The magazine's just absolute credit to you. And I say my kids loved it, and I'm sure there'd be hundreds of thousands of other kids out there who will love the magazine too. So well done for everything you've achieved. You should be so proud.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. And yeah, I'm really enjoying the magazine, and I hope you like the upcoming issues.
We will do. And hopefully I'll catch up with you soon. Well, might even see you at Oxford again next year.
Yes, you will.
We'll try and find you a room that isn't haunted this time.
Okay, thank you.
To everyone else out there, thanks for listening, and hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.